today.
Thank you for the introduction. This work was done together with Leonid Glazman, who is here, Alex Kamenev, and Maxim Khodas. This is the outline. So I will try to motivate why one should be bothering with questions that I'm going to discuss. I will talk about a couple of solvable models. Then I will discuss what one can learn from perturbation theory and how to go beyond that. So all this part is about structure factor of one-dimensional interacting fermions. And if time will allow, I will also tell you something about single particle correlation functions. And well, according to this, we are already sort of out of time. Now, we wrote four papers about that. And what I'm going to do, I will certainly cover the first two, part of the third one. And Leonid tomorrow will pick up with wherever I stop today. And wherever you will stop me today. So let's start. So let's go back some 50 years when Landau introduced something which is called fermi-liquid theory, and the idea is the following. So consider a system of strongly interacting fermions. And what he understood is that there is a one-to-one correspondence between excitations of this system and excitations of a free Fermi gas. And therefore, one can describe this strongly interacting system of fermions in terms of a liquid of weakly interacting quasi-particles. So quasi-particles do not form gas because they're weakly interacting. This is why I call it liquid. Now, well, if one talks about quasi-particles, one should probably talk about some physical quantity, which is in principle measurable, and which would tell one how well these quasi-particles are defined. And such quantity in this case is just the retarded single particle correlation function, which if one tries to calculate that, one would see that it has a quasi-particle pole. In second order interaction strengths, this decay rate of quasi-particle is proportional to its energy squared. And therefore, if I will plot the spectral function, which is imaginary part of this green function, it will have a Lorentzian peak. The width of this peak scales with the energy as energy squared. And therefore, the width is much smaller than the energy itself. So quasi-particles are increasingly better defined when we go to lower and lower energies. This does not work in one dimension. If I will try to do the same calculation in one-dimensional system, just second order perturbation theory in interaction strengths, so what I will see is that, first of all, I will see that I have a threshold type of behavior, and I will have a divergence on the threshold. Now, one could try to go beyond the second order and see what happens then. Well, it turns out that this threshold survives in each and every order of perturbation theory, but on top of this divergence, I will also get logarithmic divergences, you know, higher orders, and when one sums up these divergences, one gets a power law divergence at the threshold. So this imaginary part of green function, the spectral function, will look something like this with power law divergence at the threshold, and this was, which of course means that rather than having a quasi-particle pole, we have a branch cut. This result turns out to be exact for linear spectrum of fermions, and as was first shown by Zelyshynsky and Larkin, this is Larkin. Okay, so the conclusion of this is that, well, talking about quasi-particles, fermi-liquid, like quasi-particles, not a good idea if you deal with one-dimensional system. So what are good excitations in one dimension? Well, it's kind of clear that in 1D, we only have a collective excitations because all particles in one particle moves, all of them feel it, and all of them have to move. And, well, if I consider a model like this, just classical masses connected by springs, then it's clear that elementary excitations of that are waves of density, sound waves, and the same is true for interacting Fermi system. And because these are waves of density, these excitations are bosons, and because this we are talking about density now, then probably the better quantity to characterize elementary excitations is not a single particle correlation function anymore, but density-density correlation function. Well, one can write a retarded one, or I would rather talk about structure factor, which is just particular ordering, and these two are the same at zero temperature. So this just takes less of writing. So let's do something simple. First, let's try to do random phase approximation. And this means that I sum up a series like that for the structure factor. If I do that, I discover that the structure factor is proportional to the delta function, and this u is sound velocity of my Fermi system. Now, this result turns out to be exact for linear spectrum, meaning that what I got is not just a what I was able to hit here is the exact eigenstate because it doesn't decay. Again, this was shown by Zelashinsky and Larkin back in 73, and mathematically it follows from the following. So if I take a bubble like that and connect to its serial interaction lines, and then sum up over all possible permutation of these vertices, I will get zero unless I have just two of them. So this is why you have nothing else in this series. Okay. Well, this is true for linear spectrum. But then we are posed with a question. So it looks like this one-dimensional quasi-particles, which are bosons, are kind of better defined than the usual Fermi liquid quasi-particles, and this is what we are trying to understand. Let me just summarize what is known about structure factor for linear spectrum beyond this small q limit. So this is omega versus q plane, and blue region is where this quantity is different from zero. This line is a delta function that I talked about. It corresponds to excitations with a small momentum transfer. And well, this region here corresponds to creation of particle hole pairs across the Fermi surface. And I will have a divergence here at the lower boundary of this region. So what I want you to remember is that this G minus 1 is first order in the interaction strength, and the exponent here is negative. Okay, so it is a real divergence for repulsive interaction, and the exponent is first order in the interaction strength.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure, you can.
So, I mean, that Luttinger liquid theory is very similar to just phonons, as you pointed out. So
right.
Suppose I just take a discrete chain, make a very strongly interacting fermions, and they're almost like a big crystal. And I just say, okay, my Hamiltonian is going to be a discrete phonon Hamiltonian, not the continuum one, but just particles attached by springs on 1D. So then, you know, the wave vector is everywhere well defined. You can really talk about the wave vector of that system from zero up to 2DF.
So okay.
The whole thing has. So you can ask, what does the structure factor of that look like? That has to reproduce this behavior in the vicinity of Q going to zero and the vicinity of Q going to 2KF. It has that physics built in. But it must interpolate smoothly somehow. So what does that do? That's harmonic theory, so everything can be calculated.
Right. Well, first of all, you have excitations which have some spectrum, right? Not necessarily linear.
Yeah, that's
right. Right, so I guess, I'm sure that at low Q you're going to get a delta function, but okay, I do not know how for a classical model one goes.
Well, it's still
quantum.
It's the delta
function everywhere, right?
No, it's not. Right. That already. That
harmonic theory.
Not the. So it depends how you represent the density operator, right? So the density operator, well, just for particles on a line, is the sum of delta functions for each one of those particles.
Yeah, but the
so it's nonlinear correlation function.
Is
this a harmonic Hamiltonian?
That's my Hamiltonian, right? In Q space.
Sure, if you want.
So let's write what density is. Q component of the density operator. So basically, your question boils down to what is that?
Well, I'll tell you what.
The question whether it can accept more than one quantum.
You can. Yeah. No, it's not that. But I mean, let me back up where this comes from. So you you're right, the Hamiltonian is just a bunch of kinetic energy plus. You've got some constants here.
All right.
Okay. And now you say the particle, so the density operator at position x is delta function of x minus.
You're saying density is nonlinear in u, right?
Yeah.
Right, there's a weather effect.
Sorry? No, well, this is just a well-defined thing.
Yes, sure.
Harmonic Hamiltonian, but the density operator is nonlinear. So, this enough, I mean, this I know reproduces all the Lunger liquid power laws in the vicinity of both q equals 0 and q equals 2kF.
What is this exponent around 2kF? What
well, it depends on C and C prime. It's basically, you know, the
no, it's not
the ratio of C and C prime.
No, because this is, I disagree, because this is a question of Hamiltonian.
No, that's...
It is.
This is the momentum conjugate to U.
Okay, basically what you are saying is that...
You're talking about the case...
I can show you this calculation, definitely. It's straightforward in the vicinity of us.
What is the Fermi energy? Can you define now the Fermi energy in these terms?
You don't need it. You can
define... I need a quantum parameter, which is the ratio of interaction to the Fermi energy.
No. Just like in Lunger liquid theory, there are two...
What you define is not the Fermi energy, but K Fermi,
which is this.
So there's a parameter, I can tell you. There is a parameter that is ratio of A to the quantum fluctuations of a site. There is such a parameter. And if this parameter is infinity...
It's not infinity. That's what the Lunger parameter will be something like square to C prime, something like this.
Well, anyway, so, I mean, if your, what's it called, the Bohr parameter, I think, right, the Bohr parameter, the ratio of the amplitude of fluctuations of quantum fluctuations to the latest parameter, if it's finite, then you'll have this. If it's zero, you will not. I mean, that's
yeah, idea. Sure, it's finite, of course.
Okay, so then you'll reproduce delta function.
No, it's not delta.
Yeah, but okay. I don't understand the Hamiltonian. Because the Hamiltonian said, well, because it's n plus 1. What is n plus 1? Like particles can change places.
No, it's just particles connected by springs. You know, just literally take quantum particles connected
by
springs.
Yeah, but they can pass each other. Well, if you say it's a conjugate
springs,
momentum,
it doesn't matter. Yeah, it's a conjugate momentum.
It's a conjugate momentum. Well, the particle can change places. You know, it's some
very improbable that it changes places.
But it's a possibility. Then I don't understand what is n plus 1, because, well, it's a numeration as if they never do. No.
They're distinguishable. They're distinguishable particles.
Yeah.
Well, if they're distinguishable particles, it's something else.
It's phonons.
It's not obvious to me that you have a smooth transition.
It's
because you have a sum of different harmonics here, so just like there, it's
Pierce. But there's no separation of the wave vector space into nothing is.
Yeah, I understand that.
Are you saying that it's small q will not be delta function from this Hamiltonian?
I don't think it's a delta function at small q, no.
For harmonic Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
And if, of course, there's a definition. Yeah.
I don't think it's a delta function anywhere.
I think I disagree.
Well, this is, you know, this is really the most naive thing you would do in the limit of very strong interactions. This is exactly what it's a harmonic phonon theory.
Right, yeah.
If my fermions were just very heavy atoms, whatever.
Yes, but again, if you just expand the delta function in Fourier components, and you'll see that at k equals 0, the only thing that you'll have...
It's not so simple. It's not so simple because u depends on n.
Yes.
No, you don't.
No, it's because it's like, think about one-dimensional.
All right.
You just know the answer.
I disagree. I disagree, but let's talk later.
I believe I know the answer, but I know it's wrong. But what I'm saying is that at small k, at k much less than 2kF, it's a delta function. And in this return, you'll not have corrections from delta functions. To delta function.
Then this thing is smoothly varies with k. Okay, so I guarantee you that near 2kF it gives you the Lunger liquid power loss.
I think it's guaranteed. I fully agree.
Yeah. But, so then, how does your delta function somehow turn into a power loss? There's no way it can happen.
I'm sure the Hamiltonian is good to describe anything in between.
Of course, it's perfectly well. I mean, it's just like phonons. Right? It is phonons.
That's why it's better to take all this. Okay.
But it seems like it's a straightforward calculation.
Right, but...
Oh, no, that's why I mentioned well, it. I thought, okay, you probably
but
have done
do, it. Do you agree I can, that I can write this Hamiltonian? Right, I can write.
You can't write, write. You can't write
the
bottom
but
line.
The density is not...
The bottom density line is
just not. Let's do no. The transform to it. I mean, of course, it's not the simple, but let's do the Fourier.
Okay? I will expand this. I will...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I will expand this in
You want to do the calculation right now?
Well, there's a long wavelength part, but there's also nonlinear.
We don't have perfect fist on one.
2KF.
I do know that they look perfect fist.
2KF is fine, so there are two low energy sectors here, so the question is what happens in between. And I don't think that a nonlinear.
So your operator to wave vector K.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's an N here and an N here. So it's a trade N.
Average and somewhere around.
That's all.
Sorry? That's it. That's the answer. Okay. I mean, so.
No, let's then take N equals zero component.
No. Okay, that's not the same thing, okay? Right? Because it, there's...
No, I'm just asking, what is N equals zero component of this thing?
Okay.
Well, of course, there are but I'm just asking...
Why should you do that?
No, the sum equals to N equals zero plus the rest. Okay,
yeah.
Is it true?
I agree, yeah.
Okay, so let's do that. Okay, and let's see the free
N equals zero part is pretty straightforward.
That means I'll give it an alpha. K equals zero. N equals zero is just some site.
No, my point is that N equals zero gives
zero. No, it's just that's a specific site. It's one particle, right? The N is a particle number. You want a Poisson resummit or something, but you can't really do it with this N in here. You could first calculate the Gaussian correlation function and then start playing those games.
What I'm saying is that, maybe I'm wrong, but what I'm saying is that
you're wrong, but I...
Okay, still a finish. This sum can be entered by Poisson transformed into sum over the inverse vectors, over the Boolean vectors.
And not,
And
it's a nasty thing to try to
it is
do.
It is a nasty thing, but there is a sum.
There
is a sum, and what I'm saying is that the higher components in... Maybe I'm wrong again. I'm wrong, but I'll still make a statement. If you sum over discrete, this sum will be the sum over discrete Boolean vectors, n times k sub b. N equals zero component will give a delta function. Everything rest at small k will be exponentially small.
It's a question of
order. Is it a question of
of real analysis has to be done. It's not that simple. I've pushed it a little bit further. Even if I can show you what it looks like.
All right. It's this boundary. So the slope is lower bound on this. Okay. As Leon said, this picture is not good enough. It should rather be something like that. and this is what we will be trying to understand. So how one connect these two, and okay, in which sense this is a good approximation for that, and so on. So what I want to do is to account simultaneously for both disorder and interaction. Well, we are not the first who thought about that. Even Lattinger wrote in his paper that his Lattinger model is unrealistic for two reasons. It is one-dimensional and it is massless. Well, some people believe that one-dimensional is not no longer a problem, but massless it is still. And well, next, Haldane in this famous Lattinger liquid paper, he thought about this question. And what he says is that, okay, so if you try to add to your Lattinger liquid Hamiltonian the perturbation which describes spectrum curvature, this perturbation will be irrelevant in the from the renormalization point group point of view, and therefore, maybe correlation functions will behave the same way as without curvature. He's right. It is irrelevant from the RG point of view. So I'm not arguing about that. So why one should bother with questions like that? Well, there are many problems where this type of quantities appear. So one of them is Coulomb drag. So you imagine that you have two parallel wires. You drive, there is no tunneling between them, but there is Coulomb interaction. You drive current through one of them and measure the bias induced on the second. So there will be some bias because there is momentum transfer between the two, even though there is no transfer of particles. And if one defines something which is called Dirac resistance ratio, the ratio of this bias to this current, it will be proportional to the integral of products of two structure factors. Well, if you substitute delta functions for them, you are in trouble because it will diverge, so you have to broaden it somehow. And another problem is, of course, inelastic neutron scattering of antiferromagnetic spin chains, where this quantity, the structure factor, is measured directly. So the bright spots corresponds to strongest signal and the dark one to the weaker signal. So what happens here is that by Jordan-Wigner transformation, one can map antiferromagnetic spin chain to a 1D system of spinless fermions on the lattice, and then intensity of neutron scattering is related, is proportional to the structure factor. So this is what people measure directly in these experiments. All right, so let's consider solvable model number one, which is free fermions and which is particular limit of this Luttinger liquid. So let me write structure factor in this Lehmann representation form, which looks very much like a golden rule. So zero is ground state. This operator creates a particle hole pair with total momentum Q, and I get whatever final state I get, and I sum all of them, taking into account conservation of energy. Well, this is what conservation of energy gives me, and Xi is single particle spectrum, and because I need to create a hole below the Fermi level and a particle above the Fermi level, I will have two inequalities, and these two inequalities will translate into, for any Q, these two inequalities will translate to two boundaries of the region where my function is different from zero. Now, I have two low energy sectors here, so one of them corresponds to creation of a particle hole pair on the same branch of the Fermi surface, on the right moving branch in this case, and I can create a particle hole pair with very small momentum, and this sector corresponds to a particle hole pair excited across the Fermi surface, so momentum is close to 2kF, but the energy can be arbitrarily low. Now, if I will zoom into this region, what I will see is that, of course, instead of a line, which would represent a delta function, I have some broadening here, and this broadening is proportional to the spectrum curvature and also to Q squared. Now, if I will fix Q and go along this vertical line and plot how this structure factor looks like, well, it is basically flat here, just constant for non-interacting fermions. And so what we see here is that, the width of this peak scales as the position of this peak squared divided by the Fermi energy, so it is small compared to the frequency, which is kind of a good news. The peak is narrow. But, unfortunately, it's nowhere close to a Lorentzian, and also the width is proportional to 1 over m to the fourth power, which I will explain in the next transparency, means that one cannot deal with curvature in perturbation theory. So again, it looks like a delta function. It does go to a delta function in the limit when 1 over m goes to 0, but it's kind of a strange way of getting a delta function. So let's try to deal with spectrum curvature as a perturbation. Let me bosonize my model. I will replace Fermion operators by exponents of bosonic fields. And then I will add to my Hamiltonian perturbation like that. Alpha is right or left, and here I have gradient of this field to the third power, and the coupling constant is 1 over mass. This is my curvature. So what this term does, it describes a decay of one boson into two, and of course the lower order correction to the boson Green function is second order in 1 over m, so this is just the density correlation function, and not in the first order. And, if I will calculate this correction, I will see that it is proportional to Q to the fourth power. It has a threshold behavior, and it also diverges when omega goes to VQ. It was done this way in this paper, and in a little bit different way in that paper. So what I'm saying is that, okay, if I will plot this in, this is the box that I had for non-interacting fermions. This is the delta function that I'm trying to broaden. So this is the correction that I'm getting. It's the second order in 1 over m. It corresponds to this region up here, and this line is this boundary. So what is not clear is what happens in this region because perturbation theory breaks down. Okay? And again, on this fat tail of the structure factor, this correction is proportional to q to the fourth power divided by omega squared, and this q to the fourth power is general thing. It's not related to 1D fermions. It always happens when you have multi-pair file instances of the transition.
For omega much bigger than q.
I'm far away into this region, so when I don't no longer have a question about that. So what does it mean? Because I have q to the fourth power, it means that whatever tail I have, it doesn't contribute much to the F-sum rule. So spectral weight, most of the spectral weight still sits here. All right, so this is what we are trying to understand. Let me give you the answer before you interrupt me again. So what I'm saying is that, okay, if I have this box for non-interacting fermions, so I have here discontinuities at omega minus and omega plus, these two limits which somehow depend on Q, I turn on the interaction. And what I'm going to get, instead of this, I will get a power law divergence at this point, and, well, some sort of a singularity here, and this tail that I already talked about. Okay, and I will try to explain you now where these divergences come from. Okay, let's go to solvable model number two, which is Kalogeria-Sutherland model. So this is a model of fermions on a ring interacting via potential, which is proportional to 1 over the quark distance between two particles. Well, if you calculate that, it will be just 1 over sine squared. Everyone calls it Sutherland model, except Sutherland, who calls it a beautiful model of 1 over sine squared kind or something like that. Well, it's beautiful because everything can be calculated there, exactly. And also it's interacting. So let me just tell you what the result is for the structure factor. First of all, let's look at the domain in omega versus q plane where it is different from zero. There will be many arcs like that, identical arcs which give you the lower boundary where it doesn't vanish. But there is also an upper boundary, just like for free fermions, which also is proportional to q to the fourth power plus some second order in q contribution. Now, if I will calculate the correlation function for small q somewhere here, so anywhere basically to the left of 2kF, what I will see is that I have a power law singularity here and also here. Well, this singularity is divergent, this one is convergent, and these are the exponents. So what I did, I just took expression that Haldane guessed back in 1903 and actually evaluated the structure factor. So what I want you to notice is that if lambda minus 1 is small, meaning that the interaction is weak, what I'm getting for these two exponents is minus or plus lambda minus 1. So they're forced order in the interaction strength. And indeed, if you take this Luttinger liquid exponents, which is supposed to work here, you get the same thing because, well, it's just the same everywhere. Okay, I don't want to go through this transparency because no one asked any question.
Returning to the previous picture, or previous picture.
All right. Yeah.
This is the singularity only from one side, from omega plus. Yeah?
Well, it's a power law singularity, but it's a divergent singularity on one side and convergent on the other side. It's still power law singularity. So derivative diverges here. So power is positive.
It's not like modulus, it's something different.
So what it looks like for weak interaction is something like that.
Should I?
So it is convergent when omega goes over here, and it is divergent in this limit.
So to say it is a real number from one side on omega plus and immediately becomes complex at another side?
No, this S is a real function. Okay. It's always real.
Then what should I do when omega is bigger than omega plus?
Well, you have two step functions. Yeah. I'm saying that it is identically zero in this white region here. So, okay. Now let's go into the blue one and see what happens when you approach the boundary.
How does to do the density cannot create more than two excitations?
Because it's integrable model.
So otherwise that for
large. Yeah, yeah. So this is what I wrote here. There should be no boundary like that. So in fact, if you... I told you this perturbation theory result. If you actually write it, so what I showed was the estimate of some integral for generic interaction. Now, if you actually write this horrendous expression, which is true in second order for any interaction, and substitute their interaction potential for this model, you actually get zero. And you can show it in all orders, well, beyond perturbation theory, that it vanishes identically. For S of Q and omega in this region here, in that region, for this particular model. It's weird. The goal was not to see what happens here. The goal was to understand what happens here and to see the singularities. All right. Yes. Okay. What is the absence of what signal here is related to the full N. So in order to have non-zero in that region, you need to excite two electron hole pairs in the final state, which sit on the opposite branches of the Fermi surface, have almost opposite momenta, but the energy can be arbitrarily high. Right? Now, it so happens that for this model, when you act with this operator on the ground state, you only excite right moving particles and holes. So you cannot excite the other branch. It's a weird model.
But the moment you break this integrability, you would get something
on the moment you break the integrability, you cannot use other people's papers in order to get the answer. No, it's okay. Okay, let me tell you. Suppose you do. I want to go through this fast before anybody saw it. Suppose I replace this 1 over x squared by 1 over x squared plus some small a squared. Should not matter if a is small for all normal quantities. It does not matter for thermodynamics, for example, but it does break the integrability. So if you take this potential and plug it into whatever formula you derived, you get something which will be proportional to a to some power. This is non-integrable.
But I think I disagree in the following sense. It's not our joint paper, sorry. So I think that integrability doesn't tell that there is no S above omega plus. There are integrable models where there is something at omega larger than omega.
Right. What I said is it's not because this model is integrable, but because for this particular model, so happens that it has a property that when density operator acts on the ground state, it does not excite left movers.
Okay.
Now, for XXZ model, it's not so. It's weird even among integrable models. Which is true. Where am I? Okay. What we saw is that something happens in the first order of perturbation theory. Let's try to find such correction that is divergent in the first order of perturbation theory. And this is pretty easy. These are first order corrections to the structure factor. There is vertex correction like this.
Okay, there's vertex corrections.
and there's beginning of the RPA series. They have opposite signs, they almost cancel each other, but not quite, because interaction potential, of course, depends on Q. If you take it Q independent, then for Fermions it would mean you have no interaction at all. So if you calculate what that is, you're going to get a logarithm, which is convergent values, which is divergent everywhere, but the sign is positive over here and negative over here. Now let's go back to this Calogero model. So the exact result is this.
The exact result is that for weak interaction, there is a divergence at one limit and convergence on the other limit, and the exponent is first order in the interaction strength. And it is exactly in the sense that I wrote here. Okay, so let me treat my Calogero particles as fermions. It's fine because the potential is impenetrable and this is what I am after. So this is the correction that I want. If I will take this potential and calculate what is this coefficient here, what I'm going to get for weak interaction is lambda minus 1, which just happens to be the exponent that I have here, which for me, it kind of shows that I'm on the right track here. Okay, now let's try to understand where the singularities come from. Well, there is a famous problem which is called Fermi-H singularity in metals. So imagine that I have a conduction band, all states are filled up to some Fermi level, and I have a core level well below the Fermi level, well below the bottom of the band, which is also filled. Now I shine X-ray into this system. Well, what happens is that this electron absorbs an X-ray quantum and gets promoted to some state above the Fermi level, leaving behind a hole, which is positively charged, of course. Now, this may only happen if the energy of this X-ray quantum is at least as high as this distance from the core level to the Fermi level. And what also happened is that, well, because this hole has a charge and it interacts with the rest of the system, it will not be just a step function, but there will be a Pauli singularity at the threshold. So what is the lowest order correction, logarithmic correction, that leads to this singularity? It is exactly this vertex correction that I talked about. So this red line describes the hole left here, and the blue one corresponds to all these electrons that I have. So this is called final state interaction. I have interaction in the final state of the transition. So this was done by, first it was discovered by Machen, who also guessed that logarithms sum up to a power law, which was later shown by Nazir. So the lesson from this is the following. If you have a correlation function that has a threshold behavior, and if you have an interactions in your system, then what you should expect is that, on this threshold, the correlation function will show a Pauli singularity. Okay, now let's try to ask ourselves what happens if the hole that we create can also move. What happens if it has some dynamics? Well, people thought about this, and Leon is one of these people. So let me just give you the answer. You calculate a correlation function for an interacting system. If you still see the threshold, then the singularity will survive. Okay? In 1D, this is the case. We have a threshold behavior, interaction or not, and this is why we are going to get the singularity. Okay, let's forget about left movers and let's talk about right movers only. So, okay, let me consider I'm trying to understand if I have a threshold and what this threshold is. So let me consider possible finite states of the transition with arbitrary number of particle hole pairs and with total momentum Q. Well, let's first consider just a single pair like that. Well, I create a hole somewhere and I put a particle somewhere above the Fermi level, and if I want the energy of this state to be minimized, this should be right at the Fermi level, and this should be certain energy that corresponds to momentum minus Q. The energy of that is just omega minus, which was the threshold. Now, if I will allow excitations of more electron hole pairs, then in order to conserve the momentum, so I put some pairs here, they take some momentum away, and so I will have to move this one from that point a little bit upward. Okay, in order to conserve the momentum. But energy of any such state will be larger than this threshold, and this happens because spectrum has a positive curvature. Okay, so, these states cost me more in energy than moving this one above. All right, so interaction or not, no matter what, how many excitations I have in the final state, final state of the transition, I will have this threshold behavior. I just cannot satisfy the conservation laws when omega is below this omega minus. Okay, now let's think what happens when omega is very, very close to this omega minus. So what kind of final states contribute to my correlation function? Well, I need to create one hole somewhere here, close to this point. And I also can create as many electron hole, particle hole pairs as I want close to the Fermi level. So let's just throw out all the rest states in our system, and let's just concentrate on just these two and write some effective model which has two subbands with linear spectrum with a little bit different velocities. Okay, this is my Hamiltonian, and another component of this model is a model for the operator that correlation function of which I want to calculate. So in this language, what it does, it just creates an exciton. So it creates a hole here and puts a particle over here. If I put two holes here, I will be far, far away from my value of Q that I'm interested in. So I can guarantee that I have only one hole. Now, of course, this still had a threshold behavior for the same reason as I described. And if one actually does the calculation, one finds a Pavlov's divergence at this low limit, and this result is valid when I am very close to this threshold. And this delta omega is Q squared divided by the mass. Now, what is the exponent? Well, it is exactly the same as you expect from perturbation theory. And, well, the Hamiltonian was written to with the accuracy which was lowest to the interaction strength. So I'm claiming that this represents a sum of all these logarithmically divergent terms in all orders of perturbation theory, and two lowers to the interaction strength in the exponent. Yeah?
How can I understand the sign? So why it's negative in one limit, positive?
Well,
same pictures.
How?
So you say the sign changes when some coupling is equal to another coupling.
Well, okay, it's clear that if, for example, V changes sign, if instead of repulsion you're going to have attraction, then you will have...
So V naught minus VQ means repulsion is attraction?
No, it's... So this is Fourier transform of interaction potential. Well, usually for normal potentials, goes like this, goes down with Q. Right. So for normal potentials, so this is proportional to Q squared, and the sign is positive one. And well, I put minus over here. Now, if you have, because it's forced order in the interaction strength, then changing interaction from repulsive to attractive, you change sign of the exponent.
But for Calogero, it's just kind of...
Yeah, but, well, okay, it's lambda minus 1, and that was, the pictures that were drawn for lambda minus 1 larger than 0. So if you make it smaller than 0, then everything is inverted.
I meant for the Calogero Sazerland model.
Okay, what is V of Q?
Yes.
So
it's and
just by power counting, this is proportional to K, and actually it has to be proportional to the absolute value of K, and well, because of that, this is just K, or Q, which is being canceled out by whatever you have in the denominator, and this is all because this model is weird. This model is weird. Weird, really one. So it was this singularity here. Let's go to another limit, and still I have chiral fermions. I start with a single particle hole pair, and I fix the total momentum of this pair, and I look, okay, what is the largest energy you can get in this situation? Well, the highest energy corresponds to a particle hole pair where the hole sits right on the right below the Fermi level, and the particle is okay. It's whatever energy you have to go to absorb this momentum. And this is what I called omega plus. Now, if it creates more electron particle hole pairs near the Fermi level, well, in order to conserve the momentum, we'll have to move this one a little bit down. And because the velocity here is higher than near the Fermi level, the energy of that will be smaller. Okay? So at least for chiral fermions, I have another threshold. So not only the lowest threshold, but also the upper one. And because of that, well, I can go through the same procedure and calculate another exponent, which will be, well, to lowest order in interaction, it will be the same as the previous one, except the sign will be the opposite. Okay, and again, if you have attraction as opposed to a repulsion, everything will switch backward because it's first order in the interaction strength. Okay, now let's think what happens if you have left movers. Well, so this is still the exact threshold. So nothing you can do about that. You cannot fill this region. And therefore, the power law of singularity still survives in this system. Now, is there any effect of interaction with the left movers? Well, there is some because, well, what I needed in order to get the exponent, I needed interaction between the right movers and, well, some Q-dependent interaction constant. Well, I will get something like that also through interaction with the left movers. There is interaction between the right movers mediated by the left movers, which, of course, carries with it next order in interaction strength. So when interaction is weak, this will be just a small correction to the exponent, which I can forget about. Now, how about the upper limit that, well, existed for chiral fermions? Well, first of all, I don't have this threshold anymore if I have left movers as well. So what really happens? Well, that's the question, and that this is what I'm going to talk about now. So let's try to do perturbation theory first. So not inside this box, but now I'm outside and I'm looking what the correction is. Okay, so I'm interested at omega larger than, okay, the one that corresponds to this line omega plus, and I'm interested in small q, and this means that in the final state of the transition, I need to have two electron hole pairs that are pointing, have opposite momenta, and then the energy can be arbitrarily high. Well, if I will calculate corrections like that, so what I will discover is that I have a logarithmic divergence when I approach this line from above. So let me just plot this result. So this is the box that I want to calculate corrections to. Okay, this is the correction that I'm talking about. Now, far away from this line, I have this, this S0 is 1 over S0 is proportional to Q, so this is why there is Q to the fifth power. And there is logarithmic divergence over here. And similar logarithmic divergences appear in all orders of perturbation theory. I can try to sum them up. But before I do it, okay, let's just look at this correction. When this correction is important at all? Well, okay, it's important when S divided by S0 becomes of the order of 1, and, well, for weak interaction, it has to be exponentially close to this line. And also, because it carries such a high power of Q, its contribution to the spectral weight is almost zero. Okay, so it's not important from that point of view. Now, let me try to do the same trick in order to understand that I did before, in order to understand this, if there is a singularity here. Okay, so I put one subband here, which will accommodate my particle, and I will allow creation of particle hole pairs on both the right moving branch and on the left moving branch. And if I calculate, and this is what the density operator does. So if I will calculate the correlation function, what I will find, well, of course, I still have this singularity divergence here, but I also have a power law singularity at this line. Well, it looks smooth, but the derivative diverges. So it is a singular behavior. Okay. Now, something is wrong here, of course. And what is wrong here is that, okay, this line happens to be in the middle of continuous spectrum, and it's kind of hard to believe that singularity can possibly survive in this situation. So, which probably means that, okay, whatever effective model I used was a bit oversimplified. So let's try to take that into account. So what I'm trying to take into account is the possibility that, okay, once I put a particle here, it will decay. One-dimensional fermions without spin, with interaction.
Can you justify those three spots? When it was just left, or was it more or less?
Okay, okay. I did perturbation theory. I saw divergent logarithm. Okay, I look at this result, and I'm trying to think, okay, what kind of, well, what states contributed to the singularity? So what I'm saying is that, okay, states that were contributing to the singularity were states, single particle states, well, in these three regions here. Yes. So let's just forget about everything else.
Why justify?
What justify?
Having only those three regions.
No, what I'm going to talk now is that this was not good enough because there is decay also to other states. So all, these states do not contribute to the singularity, but they do contribute to the decay of this particle. Okay, let's try to understand what is decay rate. So let's, okay, so I have my Fermi gas. I put an extra particle on the right moving branch, somewhere above the Fermi level. And I want to understand what is the decay rate of this particle to everything else. So let's first say that this particle is distinguishable from the rest of the system. Okay, then I will say that, okay, the rate of decay of this particle. Well, so basically what it does, it propagates and interacts with my Fermi liquid, and what it sees is just the dynamic structure factor, just like neutron scattering. So what I need to calculate is a integral of the product of the delta function, which describes this particle that goes from state with momentum k to state with momentum k minus q, and well, and this extra energy and extra momentum is absorbed by the rest of the system. So if I calculate that, if I try to calculate that, I will see that, okay, what I need from the structure factor is its behavior somewhere here, above this line. And therefore, well, because I already have interaction constant squared, I get another one here. What I expect is that the result will be interaction to the fourth power and multiplied by some high power of k.
Why so different from k-square?
Well, first of all, you don't have anything in the second order of interaction, right? Well, okay, you just do the integral.
I don't understand why in this in the Fermi liquid theory, it would be k-square, correct?
It will be k-square, but it also would be lambda squared.
Lambda square,
yeah. Right. Here you have nothing in the second order of perturbation theory.
So it's very far.
Right, because it's 1D, so everything cancels, basically. And, well, whatever you get is not zero only because, well, you have to go to higher order in the interaction strength, and you also need to worry about curvature. Without that, when M goes to zero, you are done. There's no decay because we know the exact answer. Watching really just a delta function. Nothing happens. Okay, well, so what it shows that at least in this effective model that I wrote, one approximation that I made was a little bit overkill when I said that these low energy subbands have linear spectrum because I need this tail that goes to high omegas. So now, if I will also say that this extra particle is same as the rest of the particle, if I will take into account the exchange process, what I will get is even smaller answer than that. Well, it's still interaction constant to the fourth power, but instead of k to the sixth power, I will get k to the eighth power divided by m cubed. Something small for small k. Okay, let me explain how a little bit how this calculation is done, because there is a lesson to be learned. I think. All right. So I put this particle into my system. Then I look at the amplitude of decay of this particle into all possible states. And I want the decay process which would contribute to the relaxation rate that I want. Now, I'm in one dimension, and it is clear that in one dimension, just two bodies scattering will not introduce any decay because particles will just exchange momentum and energy, and that's it, and you are done. You are back in the same state where you were. So I need at least three body collisions. So this is the three body collision process. Well, three means that I have three lines entering this thing and another three going away. Okay, well, I need both right movers and I need both left movers. So blue are left movers, red are right movers. Now, let's write this amplitude in the lowest order of the interaction strengths. What does it mean? Well, it means that I connect these blue lines here, the red lines here, and this is, well, this circle that I have here, and I need to connect those with all possible, in all possible ways with interaction lines. And it's clear that I need at least two of them. Well, or to put the same thing in another way, well, I need to put red color here, blue color here, and vice versa, and also play with the direction. So you get something like eight contributions of this type. Then I take a square of the amplitude and sum of all possible indices that you have. You get 64. None of them is small. They're all large, but 32 of them are positive and 32 of them are negative. So they cancel each other. There is destructive interference. So this is why you get a small answer. You do this calculation several times after your answer stop changing.
They cancel each other still in amplitude when you have number A.
Well, you have amplitude, which is a sum of several terms. Some are positive, some are negative. You take square of that, then, well, amplitude. Of course, in the total square is positive, but there are many terms. Okay, so you do this calculation, something like 25 times, and at some point, well, the answer saturates, it doesn't change anymore. Then you make a consistency check. Leonid, you think that 64 is too low?
First of all, I think that the formula is wrong because absolute value is outside this sum, which answers your question.
No, I disagree. So you have indices here, right? Yeah. And this is an independent process. And I think you sum probabilities. So they also carry different case.
There are amplitudes that contribute to the same final state.
If the amplitude is not small.
Okay, you want me to take this line and put it over here? Okay, consider it done. No, that's not the point. I can move it.
Right, and then it's clear that there are positive and negative terms, right? Because you square A plus B and you have.
All right, okay, agree. Okay, So this thing is over here. But that was not the point. So, okay, after your answer stopped changing, you need to do some consistency check. And I think we did three of them. What you want to do, even before you evaluate this equation in this horrendous form that it is, no matter what is the interaction potential, when 1 over m goes to 0, this fourth order result should vanish. Because, well, you simply don't have curvature. It has also to vanish for when V of Q is linear in Q, and this is Sutherland model. It also has to vanish when V of Q is Q squared, which is Lieb-Linegar model. So you do this check, and then you are sort of convinced that whatever answer you got is right. Then, after that, it can take some normal kind of interaction. Come on. And for me, it will be V0 minus V of K, a quadratic function of K. So you take that and evaluate this guy and get this huge power of K. Okay, now let's go back to the structure factor and let's think, okay, what happens with the result. Well, nothing happens with this singularity. It's still there. It still diverges. Now, this, of course, these two formulas can only be valid when you are not too close to this line. So you have to be further than this distance, and, well, delta omega is this width. No, because this scales as q to the 8th power, well, it also interaction constant to the 4th power in there. It is, and that one scales as q squared. There's plenty of room in between. So there is a, well, power law tails going into here. There is a little smearing on the scale of 1 over tau, which means that the slope will be finite. Right, but, well, away from, well, it's a very narrow region. Yeah, so there's still room for summing up logarithms, that's what I mean. Now, on the other hand, when I go to large Q, I don't know, this may explode. So this will not survive, probably. Okay, and of course, visually, it doesn't matter if you have this 1 over tau or not, because the plot will look the same. In order to make it sound, you need to make attractive interaction where you will smear the peak. Or you can consider some other quantity, which is, okay, let me skip this. And the other quantity will be a spectral function. So I want to tell you what happens with this Dolshinsky-Larkin result. Okay, so let's first look at the region of support of this thing. So A is imaginary part of the retarded single particle correlation function. I put real part here because there was I somewhere here. Before you ask me questions about that. So, okay, these are regions where this function is different from zero. Now, positive epsilon corresponds to particles in the sense that creation operator x first and the destruction operator second, and this region corresponds to holes in the sense that, okay, you take it the other part of the commutator. Now, I'm going to concentrate on this region near plus Kf, near the right Fermi point, where this thing looks like that. Okay, let me first tell you what happens when you have a linear spectrum. Okay, this is how this region looks. This red line here corresponds to exactly the dispersion relation. So what I'm saying is that if you don't have interaction, this would be just a delta function. This delta function is smeared somehow, and instead you feel all this region. Now, what you have in Luttinger liquid, when you have linear spectrum, you have power law divergence at this line and then that line. It's everywhere the same because there is particle hole symmetry. So same exponent here as you have here. Now, what if you have nonlinear spectrum? So it so happens if I will now plot the dispersion relation. So this is where non-interacting delta function was that I want to smear. I will see that the edge of spectrum here, the threshold, is still the same as where, as my dispersion relation, same as in Luttinger liquid. So I do expect to have divergence here, just like it was in the Luttinger liquid, but it's no longer the case here. So now this single particle energy falls within a continuum, and therefore I expect this to be, since whatever singularity I have there, to be smeared. Okay, instead the boundary, well, is lower by k squared divided by m. Okay, so what is the spectral function? Now, if I am in this region, I will still have a power law divergence, except that the exponent will be slightly different from Luttinger liquid right here, which is not a big surprise. But over here, instead of power law divergence, I will have a finite height peak, and then it will go to zero like this. So this is the boundary that I have here. Well, the width of this peak is 1 over tau that I talked about. This is kind of a Lorentzian with power law tails. And one can evaluate all these exponents everywhere you want. I'm not going to talk about that. Of course, when you restore finite size peak with Lorentzian shape, what you also restore is the main Fermi liquid feature. It's sunny in Santa Barbara. okay, so let me just summarize. For a dynamic structure factor, for non-interacting system, this function at a fixed Q as function of frequency has a box-like shape. It's constant here, zero outside of this region. When you turn on the interaction, then instead of this, you have power law singularity and this line, and, well, a little bit smeared singularity over here. Now, if you look at single particle correlation function, so what you see is that for epsilon larger than zero and k positive, which corresponds to creating a particle and then destroying it, so particle region of my spectrum. If I include spectrum curvature, then instead of power law divergence, I will have a finite size peak. The fact that finite height.
Is it integrable?
What do you mean integrable?
Well, to call it something different.
If the sum rule is a bit. Yes, of course, but I was going to say. So Fermi liquid has two features. First, it is a Lorentzian, and second, you better have most of the spectral weight sitting on this Lorentzian. This is not the case here, because most of the spectral weight still sits on this power law tail. So it is kind of both Fermi liquid and Luttinger liquid, and well, depends what you want. was this the question? Right. So it's finite height, but the width is very small. Right, and most of the spectral weight still sits on the power law tails. Okay, that's it. Go ahead.
Very simple one. So one-dimensional permanence can be mapped on bosons from the very outset. So could you please just make any comment in context of this mapping? So basically, it would be helpful just to map permanence on bosons from the outset and then to treat them or just your treatment or just thermodynamically, which is more convenient here, and then you can just translate your results in terms of bosons.
So there is some Leonid will talk tomorrow about Lieb-Linacker model, and he will tell you about that. But I can comment what happens in Calogero model, because he will not talk about it. So in Calogero model, because the potential is impenetrable, wave function has to vanish when two particles close to each other. It looks, even if you treat your particles as bosons, still the wave function, many-body wave function, has fermionic features. So if you want to calculate this quantity for bosons, then you try to do it, for example, perturbatively. You better start from fermions, because they look more like that. And then you say that, okay, you want fermions with attractive interaction, and what you get is a peak on, not here, but over here. It will be divergent for Calogero model. For Lieb-Linacker model, as Leonid will tell us tomorrow, there is a true divergence at this point, and it's true divergence because the model is integrable. There is no decay rate. But he will talk about this in details, I believe.
Actually, I'm afraid I didn't get the bottom line. So will the same phenomena happen in any bosonic one-dimensional model?
The same phenomena happens in any one-dimensional system. Once you have a threshold behavior of correlation function, you will get power law singularity. Now, bosonic system is, another system, because in 1D, bosons and fermions, just two faces of the same coin. You can map.
So far, I remember that there is some statement that bosonic systems in one dimension as a repulsion is equivalent to fermions.
Right. Not every, right. All of them are equivalent. This is called Lieb-Linacker model. So this is my interaction, and I have two particles at x and y. This is equivalent to fermions. There is one-to-one correspondence between this model and certain fermionic model with local interaction. Now, if I try to smear this a little bit by some epsilon, I will be in trouble because, the mapping, I can still write the mapping because it's sort of kinematic mapping, but I have a string attached to every operator, so I'm afraid that for generic interaction you will have fermions, but interactions
finite
for bosons. So there is always correspondence between bosons and fermions. So the question is, if what happens when you start with bosons with local interaction, what kind of fermionic Hamiltonian you're going to get? I'm afraid that for generic interaction, this will be Hamiltonian with non-local interaction. Because, you need to attach a string. You write a fermionic operator like E to some power, which knows about all particles to the left. So, For this Hamiltonian, well, it works nicely. And Leonid will talk about that.
This should they form as a kind of this bottom form as a kind of Fermi line?
Yes. Right. And if you right. And if you talk about structure factor, for example, this only means that okay, I will have this region here, which kills superfluidity, of course.
And the singularity will be the same?
No, it will be the opposite. Bosons with repulsion are similar to fermions with attraction. Uh-huh. And because it was forced on the in the interaction strengths, well, it will transfer to the other point. So it will be over here as opposed to here. But he will talk about that tomorrow, I guess.